Let's go to work today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Stan Rieg has some ideas on not only working, but loving your work. We'll get his advice on Scribble. Work is hard, Stan. I mean, that's why they call it work.
Yes.
They don't call it play.
That's it.
But what prompted you to do this book?
Well, how it started out is about 6 years ago, my oldest son, who lives in Scottsdale, Arizona, said, "Dad, you need to record the history of how you've achieved this success for future generations of our family." Because he said, they're all going to think we've always been wealthy. And he said, I know better. When I grew up as 50 years ago, we weren't wealthy. So he said, I would like you to record how you did this and the values you and the work ethic, et cetera, that it took you to achieve the success you've achieved. And then about 4 years ago, I met Rich Wolf, who is a professional author. And I met him over at the TPC Deer Run in the Baird Hospitality Tent. And we got talking and introduced ourselves to each other. And we got talking about where we grew up and so on. And he said to me, he says, you know, you got a heck of a story. You ought to write a book. And I said, well, that's what my son's been telling me the last couple of years. And he said, I think you got a heck of a story. Let me help you on it. So that is kind of where the book got going.
Well, so that was just accidental that you bumped into?
It was incidental. Yeah. Yes. I didn't even know Rich Wolf.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I better meet him because I should do some writing. I need a spur of some kind. But what was the process like?
Well, it was really interesting because when I first started writing, I thought, I'll never get 100 pages of content because that's not my skill, being a writer. But as I started writing things, I actually was typing them in the computer, and some of them I was recording into my phone, into a phone app where you just recorded the stories. And then we would get them typed up. And then the biggest part of the whole book, the challenge was not creating the stories because that was my life. It was all the editing and editing and editing.
Yeah, well, and that's, I have no idea how a book is shaped. I don't know where, as a matter of fact, as I've read novels and and nonfiction, sometimes a book will go in a straightforward way, and sometimes it'll start and go back and start and go back and go way ahead and then come back, and you think, what's going on here?
Yes.
Who decides the structure of this sort of thing? Is that what Wolf was able to do for you?
Exactly. And a lot of the stories I drafted, I probably drafted twice as much content as ended up in the book because he kept saying, well, nobody cares about this, nobody cares about that. So he kept throwing a lot of my content out. And everybody that knows me knows that I'm really big into cars. And it's like one of my friends that read the book recently, he said, I'm 2/3 of the way through the book. And he says, there's nothing in here about cars. And he said, I know Stan's such a car guy. How come that is? And the reason is because Rich says nobody cares about cars. So he made the car chapter the epilogue of the book. So it's the last chapter of the book.
So did you write down stories and then he read them and changed them and discussed? Or did you have sessions where you sort of discussed?
We actually had several meetings where we talked about stories and taped some of the things that he had asked me about. And then a lot of it was where I wrote down the stories myself.
Mm-hmm. But that's interesting to go back through your life. How could you recall enough? How's your memory?
You know, I didn't think my memory was that great, but it is kind of like peeling an onion. Right. When you get, you know, a lot of the things that ended up in the book, I hadn't thought about in 50 years. But once you go back and you start thinking about this and you write that story down, and then that leads to something else you thought about, you write that down, and it kind of is like peeling that onion. It just kind of comes back.
Mm-hmm. Is that a process you've used, Roald?
But I think Stan is right. Once you start thinking about something, it's amazing how much you actually remember as you go back, particularly if you've had a rather unusual life, which Stan has. Maybe we ought to go back very briefly and just talk about how you are where you are today.
Yeah, how did it
all
start?
From where you started, because I think that's the gist of this book.
Yes. Well, one of the things is that when I was about 10 or 11 years old, and here we are growing up in this old stone house, we did not have a well, we didn't have running water, we had an outdoor bathroom. We had to drive up to the neighbor's house to get 5-gallon cans of water, and that's what we drank from and did our bathing with, it, cooking, etc. At some point when I was around 10 or 11 years old, a thought came into my head that someday I was going to be wealthy. Now, how do you ever come up with an idea like that when you're in those kind of circumstances is pretty incredible. So I don't know what prompted that, but I really held on to that idea. And when I first went to work at Farmall in 1965, then during the day I started going to Black Hawk Community College, and that's when it was on 16th Street Hill in Moline, where the old high school was. And I started taking accounting classes and business classes because my idea was I didn't want to work at Farmall my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And then in about 1972, I was introduced to Amway by somebody that worked with me at Farmall. His name was John Holyvoat. And by getting involved in the Amway business, I thought this could be my way to become wealthy. And so from there, on a part-time basis, my wife and I built up an Amway distributorship where I recruited friends and associates into the business and helped them recruit other people. And we built it up to the point where on a part-time basis, we had distributors in 17 states and we had over 1,700 distributors.
Wow.
So I'm thinking, I'm really rolling now, you know.
Meanwhile, you were working at Farmall?
Working full-time at Farmall.
Doing what?
I was a machinist at that time at Farmall. Yes, in the machining division.
Oh, well, where did you go? Amway was another step, wasn't it?
Yes, it was kind of my launching pad to real success because in Amway, I learned how to deal with rejection. I met Vince Gaffey from Savannah, Illinois, and he introduced me to the idea of reading inspiration and motivational books and listening to motivational tapes when I was on the road going for different recruiting sessions to try and recruit other distributors. And so that's where I learned a lot about thinking positive and believing you could achieve unbelievable things.
Mm-hmm. So where from Amway?
So then from Amway, after I was in that for 8 years, I thought I should be making $100,000 a year, and I was not. So I bailed out of Amway, and I'm living in DeWitt now, still working at Farmall. And then I started in the real estate business, and I did that in the early 80s, you know, 80, 81, 82. Obviously, real estate wasn't doing very well then. And then in 1985, when the announced sale of Farmall to J.I. Case happened, I had been there for 21 years, and so obviously I was out of a job. And at that time, the U.S. government had what they called the Job Training Program Act. And so those of us that were unemployed were invited to attend some of the local junior colleges or community colleges, if you will. And since I only live 20 minutes from Clinton, I went to Clinton Community College for a week-long career and assessment evaluation class. And when I finished that 4.5-day session, I added up all these scores for my dexterity, my attitude, and aptitude exercises I employed. I was most ideally suited to be a securities analyst or a securities broker. Yeah. Pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is.
And that was really the beginning of the rest of the story and my true path to becoming wealthy.
And how did you become a broker?
So what happened then is that was on Friday at noon. So Monday morning, I went up and talked to the president of DeWitt Bank and Trust, who was a neighbor of mine. I said, you know, I went through this whole exercise, and it appears I'm ideally suited to be a securities advisor. And he said to me, I think you'd be good at it. And I'm thinking, really? You know? And so I put together a resume, and it ended up, after I decided I'm going to interview all the major investment firms around the Quad Cities. And it ended up that Merrill Lynch, Harry Barnes offered me a position as a trainee, and so did Jack Stengel, who was managing the Dane Bosworth office in downtown Davenport, right across from Davenport Bank and Trust in those days. Uh-huh. And I ended up, it was a tough decision deciding which one of those firms to go to work for, but it ended up I went with Dane Bosworth because they had a great training program for new investment advisors, and I had to go and live in Minneapolis for 4 months, and it was a six-day-a-week extensive and intensive training session where you got all your licenses and learned about investment concepts and strategies and investment products.
So you became involved in investments then?
Yes.
And that's where the money is?
That's where it came from because a lot of people don't like to cold call. But since I was a factory worker in my previous career, I did not come from an affluent family. I didn't have a high level of education. So the most practical thing was for me to cold call people. Mm-hmm. And so I had a good voice and I had a lot of success cold calling. And the first 4 years I was in the investment business, there were 18 other advisors in my training class, and I was number one out of the 19 advisors, three out of the first four years.
Wow. So then you finally achieved what you set out to achieve.
I did.
That's interesting. It's interesting that you decided you wanted to be wealthy rather than you picked that rather than a profession. How do you account for that? You know, most kids want to be a fireman, they want to be this, they want to be that. But you set your sights on wealth.
Kind of interesting because I remember about that same time, or maybe a little bit before that, one of my uncles who was a farmer asked me one time, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I said, I'm going to be an attorney.
Hmm.
But I never finished college, so obviously I was not going to be an attorney. So I guess I really don't have an answer to that, a good answer.
Uh-huh. Well, Tweet wanted to be wealthy, and look at him.
I'm comfortable. I can't say I'm wealthy. But
I think that one of the huge things that launched me really, though, was the Amway experience, because when you're cold calling and I'm cold calling you and trying to get you to become an investor, you're going to deal with a lot of rejection. You deal with people hanging up on you. You deal with people swearing at you. But you also met a lot of really nice people by cold calling. And so I just learned to overcome the negative or the adversity I run into.
Boy, you have to have a pretty thick skin for that.
I admit that is true, because I can tell you there were nights when I would go home, take off my suit, and go straight to bed because, you know, after a while, you feel like you're really beat up. And the next morning, I'd get up, and I'd be the first one at the office, and I'd be cold calling again.
My guess is the average person at this point would give up, right? Why didn't you?
That's what Rich Wolf, who was my author on the book, kept asking me. He said, what made you persist, and what made you go for these big goals? And I don't have an answer for that. It's kind of in me. It's just who I am.
That's interesting because, you know, I'm not a driven person at all. And I never had any particular goals in life. I just ambled along and to see what was next. And it's worked out pretty well.
I think it's worked out very well.
You are the most driven person I know as a friend.
Driven
to found the Genesius Guild, driven.
That was a... That was out of frustration.
You founded this radio station. I mean, come on.
That both of those were out of frustration. I founded the radio station because I was running into debt in politics and needed a respectable work yeah. on the side. Janice's go because I was so frustrated. I wanted to act. And when I got in the Playcrafters, they canceled their whole season. So what are you going to do?
Yes. Well, you know what you had mentioned earlier about, we were talking about working at Farmall. One of the biggest things is that I believe that if somebody is doing something they love doing, it's more like play than work. And
That's true.
One of the reasons I keep telling my clients, I'm not going to retire. I plan on working until I'm 90 right. years of age. And I have an office here in Davenport with Baird, and I have an office in Scottsdale, Arizona, where I have a home. So when I go to Arizona in the winter, I know a lot of people think he's going golfing every day. What I do every day, same thing I do here. I go to the office.
Right.
It's only 3.5 miles from my house. Mm-hmm. So it's passion, and I love working with people, and I feel like I'm making a difference in people's lives, just like you are with fine arts, et cetera. And that's fun. Mm-hmm. It's not work.
Did you treat working at Farmall the same positive way?
I would tell you at Farmall that I always wanted to be in the best paying job
right.
I could have at Farmall. You know,
right.
So in that way, I was driven. I also was one of those guys that didn't wait for somebody else to do it. I would just volunteer to do the job, you know. And since it was a union shop, a lot of people would, you know, the foreman or the general supervisor might ask you, well, would you do this for me? And they say, no, that's not my job description, you know. And I'd say, I'll do it. I don't care. It's just part of my job. And I think that you just kind of take charge and you take accountability and take
responsibility. Yeah, so almost any job can be made rewarding, right? Love it. Take this job and love it.
I think that's true, and that's what I'm trying to point out in the book, because I believe that with all these mergers and acquisitions and plant closings and buyouts that are going on around the country, a lot of people that are listening are going to be losing their jobs. And so I feel like if they go to my website, takethisjobandloveit.org, I have resources on there where they can just have a hyperlink directly to the Clinton Community College and the Community College's program where you can go through this career and assessment evaluation. I also have a hyperlink in there where they can go to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics and see where the job openings are and what type of jobs there are and the skills you need to be able to do those jobs.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. The government gave you a leg up in
yeah.
that program. We always talk, you know, people talk about government interference, and I think, no, government's responsible for a lot of good things. They sponsor all kinds of research, and they do all these assisting programs. And those are pretty valuable, aren't they?
They certainly are, because they can be life-changing for people that know how to obtain those resources or take advantage of them.
I don't see you taking notes, Roald.
No, I'm waiting for Stan to read a section of his book and whet people's appetite. Can you read us a little? Incidentally, is this a memoir or a kind of how to do it yourself?
Actually, it is. It's not a bragging book. It actually, I feel like my life can be an exercise for other people to learn from. Some of the tips I shared in this book. And I think on the inside cover, Rich Wolf, the introduction he wrote in the book, I think pretty much says it. It states, "What an unbelievable story. Stanley Reed grew up in an Iowa town of 140 people. Parents never owned a house, alcoholic father, mother in a sanitarium, 6 siblings, all very close to this day. Only 2 other kids in his grade school class, no college degree, was a factory worker 21 years, factory closed, became a stockbroker, earned many millions through hard work and persistence, is a community leader, philanthropist, exotic car collector, and married to my childhood sweetheart of 52 years. A riveting, fun, and fast-paced biography that will have you shaking your head by the time you finish it."
I haven't started it, and I'm shaking my head.
Yeah, I don't find it believable. How do I know you're not an imposter?
Horatio Alger, one question I want to ask you. Horatio Alger divided success into pluck and luck. It doesn't sound like you depended on a lot of luck.
No, I kind of agree.
How much do you think luck plays in your own personal story?
There is some luck to it. The fact is that when you are presented an opportunity and you've got to make quick decisions, and I think that has some to do with luck. And the other thing is, like Thomas and Jefferson said, the harder you work, the luckier you will be.
Mm-hmm.
And true. I've never been afraid of work. Right. And I have four brothers who are very successful in their respective or chosen field. One of them is a farmer. The other three are in the masonry business, and they've been in business in Colorado Springs, Colorado for 43 years. And this year, they're going to have the most successful year they've ever had after 43 years, which means they work 6 days a week, even though they're very successful. So it's kind of in our blood, in our DNA, to just keep on cranking.
Well, that's true. But, you know, one of the things that is interesting, at a crucial point in your life, you went to talk to a friend. And my daughter, who helps corporate people who are out of work, she helps them find other positions.
Yes.
And she says, it's all in connections. If you want to go to work, find a place where you know someone and go talk to that person. And it seems to me that if you're naturally gregarious, you have an advantage.
I agree.
And so connections with people is really critical. And said the loner.
Yes.
Oh, dear. Well, I must say, Stan, that's quite a story. And when did the book come out?
The book was released December of last year, December of 2018. It took Rich and I about a year to do the book. One of the neat things about the book is I am an avid reader. I read a lot of books. And one of the frustrating things to me is when you open up a book, all the pictures about that person's story are in the center of the book.
Right.
What we did in this book, we used really high quality paper. And when I'm telling you a story about the outhouse is on that page.
That's good. That's a plus. Where can people get a copy of this book?
Great question. This book is actually available at all three of the Costco stores in Iowa, in Davenport,
okay,
in Coral Ridge, and also in Des Moines at the west side of town in Des Moines where the Costco store is. It's also available in St. Anita's at Kelmus's store, and it's available in St. Anita's at St. Anita's Body and Paint. And you also can just go on the internet,
right,
and you go to takethisjobandloveit.org. And there's all kinds of information on that site, as well as the resources we talked about earlier in the program. And it also tells you how you can buy the book.
Okay. Now, are you going to write another book?
Well, Rich, when I was writing this, he said, you got enough material for two books. And I said, let's get through the first one first.
Well, let's see how long you hold out, Stan.
Yes.
Do you do readings and workshops? And
I have done
like
book signings. I've done some book signings, and we are going to be doing some workshop things for Clinton Community College and Scott Community College in the next month or so once the students all get settled in. Tracy, one of my assistants, is working with the staff at both of those places to get some things scheduled because we want to share not so much about my success, but we want to share how I did it with kids that are going through college now that are maybe trying to figure out what they want to do for a career, and try and provide them with resources and some inspiration that it's not so important where you start. It's what your goals and dreams are and where you're going and what effort you're willing to put in to make them happen.
Well, Stan, you had quite a story, and I thank you. Stan Rieg is the author of Take This Job and Love It, and we are grateful to you for sharing your experiences with us.
Thank you, Don.
I imagine you plan to contact Rich Wolf right away. Huh?
Well, that is interesting. I mean, You know, it's clear that Stan could have written his own story.
Yeah.
But what he pointed out about Rich was essentially an editor and said, people don't want this. They don't want to hear about this. You know, Rich knows the world of literature.
Uh-huh.
And so I can see that working together well.
Well, let's go back to the conversation we had with Mike Romke, you know, about how,
right.
What is the public taste?
Right.
Will this book work and
right.
so on? And there are people who understand that and that they don't necessarily include all the people who are ready to write.
But the fact that he met this ghostwriter just by accident at the TPC or Deer Run.
Yeah. That's a luck
yeah.
and luck. Luck does play a role.
Well, in that case, it sure did.
What book are you been
I'm
lucky
not,
enough
I'm,
to be
I
reading?
Want to talk a little bit about one of the things that astound all both of us is how many different people in the Quad Cities have something to do with writing, selling, reading.
Rich
books.
Is the 215th person.
Yeah, and that's just the Quad Cities and outlying areas
that's
like
right.
DeWitt.
Yeah.
It is just amazing how many people, in the 50s, late in the mid-50s when I was in college, a couple of the English teachers at St. Olaf sort of treated literature as eventually it was going to be history because the atomic age isn't hospitable to fiction or poetry especially. I thought about that a couple of weeks ago when the Chicago Tribune published three of the stories, the top three stories in the Nelson Algren Short Story Prize for 2019. The Tribune runs that every year, and they have respectable writers judge it. They got 3,000 entries.
Yeah, I know.
3,000 short stories.
I read Publishers Weekly and Poets and Writers just to find out what's going on. And some issues are nothing but calls for writers, poets, all sorts of people, novels, essays, you name it. There are places that will publish. And you think there's an awful lot of writing going on in this country.
It is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just the Quad Cities. It's everywhere. And somehow writing has survived the atomic age.
Well, you know, that's true. I hope books survive. But books have made a bit of a comeback now. And that is kind of surprising, the way that long-playing records have made a comeback. Simply because the LPs sound better than
right.
CDs and much better than MP3.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what happens to Barnes & Noble. They've been sold to the England's top bookseller.
And he's good, yeah.
His theory is every bookstore ought to be local. And
yeah.
It ought to appeal to the local audience instead of Barnes & Noble's ordering 3,000 copies for its 1,000 stores. They're
yeah.
going to have more local autonomy. And it's going to feel more like you want to go in and have a cup of coffee and sit there and browse. So,
yeah, that's I've worried. You know, once we lost Borders, I've wondered how long it would be for Barnes and Noble.
Well, they're in trouble, but they've been bought. So,
yeah,
it's going to be interesting to see how the change.
Well, this guy has happens. Made a profound change in the way bookstores operate in England. And the hope is that he's going to do the same thing for Barnes & Noble, because I wish nothing but great success for all bookstores. I think the world ought to be filled with bookstores, but that's just my own narrow opinion. And that's also all the time we have for today. Thank you very much for being with us. I'm Don Wooten with Roll Tweet. Join us next week for another Scribble.